Book Club at 91.7 WVXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. This is the year of the 200th birthday of Charlotte Bronte, and many authors are paying tribute in many different ways and many forms of books, some biography, and some, let's call them mashups, and that's what we're going to talk about right now with author Lindsay Fay, the best-selling author of a number of previous novels, but this one is called Jane Steele, a novel. Lindsay Fay, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you for having me.
I have to say I was attracted to the book right away when I knew that you were playing off a Jane Eyre and you named this Jane Steele. I thought that was, was that your idea or did that come from the publisher?
No, that was all me. It's sort of a jazz riff off of Jane Eyre.
Well, it's a wonderful mix, and right from the beginning, you dedicate the book to Jane Eyre and Nicholas Nickleby, and I see those great writers' fingerprints all over this book, but what was that first inspiration to write Jane Steele, this riff on Jane Eyre?
Well, I was rereading Jane Eyre because I think that there's a difference between reading something new and devouring it, right? Because you want to get to the end of mm-hmm. this narrative and you want to understand everything that happens to all of these people and everything's new. So that's a certain sensation when you're reading something for the first time. But it's a different sensation when you're rereading something that really means something to you, you know, and you're going back to it and you're reading it at a different time in your life, inevitably, if you're rereading something. So I've read Jane Eyre a number of times, but a couple years ago I was rereading Jane Eyre, and it suddenly occurred to me that this young child who is standing up to all the adults in her life who are telling her that she's wicked and hellbound and just the most wretched personality and, you know, the worst kid in the entire world. She's standing up to them and she's telling all of them, no, you're mistaken. I actually have my own moral center. I know exactly who I am. And I know that you're hypocrites. And I know that you're saying this for very questionable reasons. And suddenly it struck me that I was a little bit eccentric for a kid to do. She's quite young. And it's a marvelous thing in the book because it really sets up the character of Jane Eyre. And I love that Bronte wrote it that way. But it is a strange choice for a child not to believe any of the adults who are telling her this. So I asked myself the question, what if a child who was in the identical circumstances to Jane Eyre, a child who wasn't Jane Eyre, who was just somebody who was also orphaned, who was also in a home where she was not loved and was often attacked, a child who was sent to a horrifying boarding school along the lines of Nicholas Nickleby and Jane Eyre, which are very parallel narratives. What if instead of saying, no, you're mistaken, I know my moral center, I am a good person, what if she said, I'm evil, huh? And then thought about it, and then said, I could make that work, you know? So it was a thought exercise, right? Like, what if a kid said, okay, so I'm a bad person. Great. I'm going to be a bad person. And it's interesting because I think that the character of Jane Steele, my version, she's not a bad person. She just believes this lie. And Jane Eyre didn't. Jane Eyre knew that it was a lie, but Jane Steele doesn't. And so she sets off free of a bunch of moral constraints that would absolutely curl the hair of a character like Jane Eyre, the original one, mm-hmm. because she doesn't believe in lying to get out of a scrape. She doesn't believe in violence, certainly. She doesn't believe in any of these things. She doesn't even believe in running off to the south of France with her, you know. Mr. Rochester is like, okay, I have this attic wife problem. I get it. And he's the most ridiculous character. And, you know, obviously covered in Byronic angst and like, sure, it's sexy, but come on. Like, you have an attic wife, dude. Get it together. She's like, no, I'm not going to go to the south of France with you. And Jane Steele, as opposed to Jane Eyre, you know, if she's in the same situation, she's like, yeah, I will absolutely go to France with you. that would be fine. So she just sort of sheds a bunch of the conventions that were part of the Victorian period. And I've essentially created somebody who who existed during the Victorian period, because there were all sorts of women who, willing to do all sorts of things in order to survive, right? But she's not constrained by any degree of politeness or convention, except for as far as it is deemed to her to be worthwhile for everybody, you know? So she doesn't, she's not as tied, her hands aren't tied the way Jane Eyre's are, because she believes that she's bad.
And, you know, and I love that Jane Steele, throughout the book, is reading Jane Eyre and learning
right.
from Jane Eyre. And, you know, the parallels, I just love how it unfolds, Lindsay. I mean, and I hear you, you know, I hear you, you laughing, and you've turned Jane Eyre into a serial killer, but this is still, there's still a lot of humor in this book. And I that's part of what really, you know, kept me reading from page to page. And that's, you know, did you fear taking Jane Eyre and doing this to it? Because there are so many people who worship, Charlotte Bronte's work.
I love that question because I absolutely did not fear anything about it. First of all, because of what you just touched on, turning Jane Eyre into a serial murderer is ridiculous, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's already a ridiculous concept. So I should add, though, that other people have corrected me and have been like, no, she's not a serial killer. She's a vigilante. And I've said, ah. And then, you know, anytime it creates a reader conversation like that, it's good,
mm-hmm.
right? Where people are engaging with it. Does she leave a high body count? Sure. But she is always killing because either she has to defend herself or she has to defend somebody who's weaker than she is or someone she loves. There's never a circumstance outside of that. She's never doing it for fun. She's doing it because she has to. And so she's sort of Batman.
Right? true.
Like a little bit. She's sort of the Victorian Batman, the female Victorian Batman. So there's that aspect of it, of course. But was I scared of it? No, because I love that I'm talking to you on Charlotte Bronte's birthday. I think that is the most beautiful thing. But I had no idea that the 200th birthday was coming up. I did not know. And I sat down to write this out of pure love for Jane Eyre. And the reason I wasn't scared of people's reactions is because nobody loves Jane Eyre more than I do. I love it. Like, it's great. I think it's a marvelous book. Now, could people make the argument they know more about Charlotte Bronte and know more about Jane Eyre than I do? Sure. That could absolutely be true. But I love the book. So it was coming from a real place of homage, you know, and a tribute to what Bronte did in the first place. And so I think it's so tongue-in-cheek and so sort of, you know, improbable in places, but at the same time heartfelt, that it didn't concern me at all that people who love Jane Eyre would be angry at me because I was writing it as a fan of Charlotte's, you know.
Mm-hmm. Lindsay Fay, her new novel is called Jane Steele. It's a beautiful riff on Jane Eyre. You can find it where books are sold and learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And it covers a lot of ground. I don't want to give too much away. While it does have parallels to Jane Eyre, the one parallel to the period that I really loved are the names of the characters here. And that had to be fun, coming up with names like Constable Sam Quillfeather. What was that like as you were writing?
I've been told my names are somewhat Dickensian.
Well, I did think that, but true. I didn't want to offend you. So.
Oh, it's true.
Oh, yes.
That's deliberate. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I dedicated the book to Jane and to Nicholas Nickleby. And you're reading Jane Eyre, right? And it's such a marvelous narrative, and I love it so much. But it is really, at times, quite melancholy. And I appreciate that at the same time that if you're reading Nicholas Nickleby, you're reading Dickens. And so you're never going to be melancholy for all that long with Dickens because he can't help it, right? There's going to be a joke in there somewhere. So, for instance, the horrifying headmaster is a perfect trope, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Brocklehurst in Jane Eyre. Mr. Brocklehurst is a horrifying hypocrite and a disgusting human who starves his students and cuts off their hair and does all sorts of, you know, wretched things to them. And he's revolting. This was based on Charlotte Bronte's actual headmaster at the actual school she went to, and two of her sisters died not soon after. They did not survive that school, and Charlotte did, and she wrote a book about it. So there's a lot of layers here, right? Mm-hmm. Then in Nicholas Nickleby, the same headmaster figure, his name is Mr. Squeers. And in Dickens, the minute you read somebody's name, you know if you're going to like this person or not. Right?
True, true.
Instantly. So Mr. Squeers, Dickens says, was not beloved of many people because he had but one eye and the general population favors two.
Right.
That's hilarious.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I can't even think about that sentence without laughing. Like, it is so funny. Like, yes, the general population does favor two eyes. That's like, thank you. Prescient, really, of you to point that out, Charles. Thanks, Chuck. But, like, you're reading about Mr. Squeers. You're like, I know this is, I hate this guy. I already hate this guy. So I'm setting out to write a headmaster, right? I have to have the perfect name. Now, the letter V, partly maybe because the word villain starts with the letter V, or villainous, villainy, all that stuff. There's a lot of bad words that start with the letter V, that sound. So that's a really good beginning for a name. The letter M, for some reason, is also evil. I mean, you can think about Lord Voldemort and like Darth Vader and all those V names, right? Mm-hmm. Or you can think about Mordor in Lord of the Rings or Professor Moriarty, you know? Like, there's a bunch of M ones, too.
Mm-hmm.
So my headmaster's name is Vesalius Munt. And when you read the name Vesalius Munt, you're like, I don't like that guy. That guy is a bad guy.
Well, and that was my exact reaction
really
when
fun.
I read it in the book. I was like, you know, right. I didn't like him the minute that he walked in and Jane met him. I didn't like him as much as she didn't.
Exactly. You're like, his name is Vesalius Munt. I don't like him. I don't like that dude. There's something wrong with him. It's really fun to do that, I got to tell you. It's so much fun.
So how long did you work on this? Because I imagine while you had something of a framework, you had to have fun, you know, inventing these ridiculous situations for Jane Steele. How long did it take to put this together, Lindsay?
I always take about 6 months to do research. And it takes me that long because of the fact that I try to have a lot of historical accuracy in my narratives. So when I was writing Dust and Shadow, my first novel, I was studying the Ripper Murders. When I wrote the Timothy Wilde trilogy, I was studying that particular year and those particular social aspects of what the first policemen are combating. I would be studying the newspapers in Bryant Park Research Library in the microfilm department for about 6 months, figuring out what was going on during the time period so that I could write those books. For Jane, I had to research a number of things. I had to research it was further back in London's time period than I had done before. So I was reading things like Henry Mayhew's social justice nonfiction work, a seminal piece. You can get it on Google if you want to read it. It's called London Labor and the London Poor. You can also read his other works on the London underworld, and Henry Mayhew is always amazing. So I was going through all of his stuff. I was rereading Jane Eyre a bunch. I was rereading Nicholas Nickleby. I was rereading Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's The Sign of Four, which is another major influence, and then I had to research the entirety of Sikh culture because Charles Thornfield, who's the Mr. Rochester character, he was born in the Punjab. He was born in Lahore, and his entire household is Sikh, and a great many of the major characters are Sikh in this book, and he's basically brought his whole, you know, like, essentially family with him back to England, and they are sort of just hanging out in this country estate, trying not to be noticed. Right? But there were a lot of people who were emigrants from various colonialist wars that were being fought by the British East India Company who were living in England. And I don't really care to write books that are just about white people. I think there are a lot of interesting people in the world. So that was a joy, but I had to figure out, you know, I was reading the Guru Granth Sahib, which is the holy book of the Sikh culture. I was reading British accounts of the history of the battles of the First and Second Sikh War when the British East India Company completely destroyed the Punjabi Empire, which was an incredible narrative and a dark one and has a lot to do with the events in the latter two-thirds of Jane Steele. And then I was reading a bunch of things by Sikh scholars so that I really understood where they were coming from and what their opinion of the, you know, historical significance of these wars were. So that takes 6 months for me. And then after that, it takes 5 to 6 for me to, generally about 5 for me to write the thing down. And then the rest of the process is me making it good, because writing essentially at the end of the day is rewriting. So then I have to edit it. But I always feel much better once the first draft is finished, because the research process is great. And then the first draft process is challenging, but there are good things about it. But then once I have something that I'm like, okay, essentially, like, I love this quote. Someone once said, writers don't just have to sculpt the sculpture. They don't just have to chisel away at the stone. They have to make the stone first. First, writers have to create the marble, and then we have to chisel it. And it's true. I have to make a thing exist before I can start chiseling away and making it beautiful. So that is an important aspect of what I do. So yeah, it takes me approximately a year to get through the process. I'm sorry, that was probably a really long answer.
well, but it all shows that passion and that care in the book. So thank you, Lindsay, for both the answer and the book.
My pleasure.
Lindsay Fay, her novel is Jane Steele, a riff on Jane Eyre. Jane Eyre as a serial killer. Cosmopolitan calls it Jane Eyre with a dose of Dexter. You can learn more about it at WVXU.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.